It is June 3rd. Summer is finally here, and so is episode 57 of The Main Event. Ryan Jarrell and Brian Stackpole here, as always. Today on the show, wow, it is a great one. We have the Barbarian, Tim Boach, on the phone, going to be talking about his upcoming fight against Johnny Big Rig Hendricks at UFC Fight Night 112 on June 25th. Also, a day before that fight takes place, there's another huge one, this time for the Bellator promotion. We have Brent Primus on the show as well, as he prepares to take on Michael Chandler for the lightweight belt at Bellator NYC, Sonnen vs. Silva on June 24th. And we might be at that fight, Brian. Live.
Absolutely, yeah. Looking forward to that. But I have a bone to pick with you before we get going any further. Summer, I froze my butt off last weekend. And this week a little bit, too. Dodging raindrops and all that BS. I wore my winter jacket for a baseball broadcast. That's how cold it was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue with you.
Ridiculous.
But it is June, and so whenever I think of summer, June is like the kickoff for me. May really isn't quite summer. But
true.
When the calendar does turn to June, then I think summer's here.
You know, I hate the month, not the month, but the season of winter and fall by extrapolation. Spring is my second favorite. Summer's my favorite. But I was actually born on the autumnal equinox.
Really?
Yeah, fun fact.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Just letting everyone know a little bit more about me. But yeah, we're still a couple days away from the official set of summer. But yeah, hopefully this state of Maine gets a little bit warmer because I'm tired of this BS.
Well, I got my first suntan sort of the other day. I have a little
humble
color.
Humble brag. I got you.
So, yeah, for me, summer is here. Although I have been out camping. I've told you that previously before
right.
We went live here. So, you know, maybe I've been out in the sun a little bit more than the average bear. But it's neither here nor there. The sun is out. It's a beautiful day today. And looking forward to some MMA.
Still cold, so I'm growing my beard out until it gets warmer. And then I will shave it. Or maybe not. Well, it depends on how I feel on any given day.
Yeah, we both actually have some nice beards going right now.
Not bad.
I'm
yours,
not sure.
Yours more trimmed than mine, but
is
you know,
it? Yeah, well,
it happens. It's all right. Mine's kind of just flopping in the wind right now, so it's what's happening.
Looks
right
good.
Now.
You look like a real man.
So what's going on in the MMA world that you want to talk about this time around,
my
friend?
First of all, we got to talk about that performance by Alexander Gustafsson.
Yeah.
What he did to Glover Teixeira was a masterpiece. That was as good as I've seen Gus look against a high-level opponent like Glover Teixeira. And for me, all it does is I want to get that rematch of Gustafsson and Jon Jones. I know Jones, he's marked for the belt. He's going to be taking on DC at UFC 214. That's at the end of July. But man, regardless of what happens in that fight, I want to see Jon Jones and Alexander Gustafsson back in the octagon together at some point soon because the fans deserve it, damn it.
They deserve it. My question is, though, what happens if DC wins that fight or when he wins that fight? Because I still do contest that he's going to beat Jon Jones when he finally steps in the octagon, or if that ever actually happens. Does that mean we never get to see that fight?
So the co-main event of that UFC 214 is Jimmy Manoa versus Volkan Ozdemir.
Mm-hmm.
And the winner of that fight is supposed to be in line for the next shot. So I think regardless of what happens between DC and Jones, the loser faces Gustafsson. Gustafsson wins that fight. If he does win that fight, then he gets the next shot. And I think that's probably what you're going to see the UFC do.
I'd love to see it. That'd be fun. Though I still feel like Gustafsson deserves the next shot after Jones. I think he's proved himself. And you can say what you want to about Manoa. I feel like maybe if he has a dominating performance, he would also be worthy. And I also heard they're basically putting him on that card to make sure that if Jon Jones cannot compete again or if something happens to DC, they can destroy that fight that he has scheduled and bring him up into the main event, which I think is smart. It's good foresight for any MMA promoter to have that kind of wherewithal to say, you know what? Stuff happens all the time, so might as well cover our backsides.
Yeah, and you know, another thing I was going to talk about really here that's interesting is, you know, I've spoken to Misha Serkinov in the past, and I've never been able to connect with him to get him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a guy I did connect with, and he said he'd come on the show here real soon, is the guy that just beat him, Volkan Ozdemir. And if you saw that knockout,
absolutely
that
brutal.
Was unbelievable. Yeah. And, I mean, that guy must have unbelievable power in his hands to do what he did to Serkinov, because nobody's ever done it before. Serkinov was on the rise, although he wasn't a favorite in that fight. A lot of people thought he was going to win. And Ozdemir put the light heavyweight division on notice with an unbelievable performance. So hopefully we're going to get him on the show here soon, and we'll talk to him about his next fight with Manoa and the whole landscape of the UFC light heavyweight division, because that would be really cool.
think about it this way. Just two UFC fights, and he's impressed enough people with that Surkhanov fight and the St. Preux win, too, back in his debut with the promotion to get this high-profile type of fight. And it's, again, it's a proving ground, because I think a lot of people will say, what has he done? Who has he beaten in this top-notch promotion? Well, now he's going to have a chance to take out three absolute monsters at the light heavyweight.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many interesting matchups to make, you know. Speaking of which, in the light heavyweight division,
sure.
did you see the back and forth between John Jones and Alexander Gustafsson on Twitter?
I love good trash talk like that. And he was actually calling him out in the press conference afterwards, too, didn't he? I watched a little bit of it, and I'm trying to remember it from this weekend because Memorial Day was kind of a haze anyways, just because I slept a whole bunch. But yeah, I love the trash talk, especially from a guy who has a little bit of Swedish accent.
Yeah, I mean, I love both of these guys. They're as good as it gets, but obviously, I've talked about before, I want to see the rematch. I think the fans want to see the rematch.
Yep.
And I think both of these guys want the rematch, because although John Jones won the fight, that's his most highly controversial win to date. So I know he wants to come back and definitely beat DC first, but I know he wants to get another shot at Gustafsson, because a lot of people think Gustafsson won that fight, me included. Now, I know you got to, in order to beat the champ and take the belt,
right. You
need to beat him emphatically. Maybe Gustafsson didn't do that. But in my opinion, he won a split decision. It was very, very close. But the back and forth of how this went was really comical. You know, John Jones is talking about, I'll read this verbatim. He said, and here's a little FYI, you didn't lose against DC and I because of your cardio. It was because of your lack of heart. So he's calling out Gustafsson's heart. And then I'm going to skip that one because we're keep things a little PC here. I'm not going to swear. And then Gustafsson responds, and he says, at Johnny Bones, no, my friend, against you, it was because of the absence of U.S. anti-doping.
Hmm.
So a little jab there back and forth,
yeah.
and I've loved it. I love seeing that back and forth between these guys.
I know MMA purists say that they just want all the action to be done in the cage, and I can understand that, and I can appreciate that. But what sells it to the casual fan and can make this sport bigger and make everyone more money from all the way down to the smallest promotion overseas and stateside to the biggest ones in the UFC and get them more money is more exposure, more people buying the merchandise, more people buying the pay-per-views, and this is what helps sells it.
Yep.
If you're going to try to cut into the boxing market and the entertainment dollars predicated on sports like basketball and whatnot, you need these type of vocals. You need these people talking. You need these personalities.
Two words.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor.
Exactly. He's going to be making millions upon millions upon millions of dollars whenever that fight is officially confirmed and he steps into the boxing ring for the first time. And no matter the outcome, he's going to be set for life. His wife is going to be set for life. His kid is going to be set for life. His kid's kid.
Yeah.
His kid's kid's kid.
My kids are going to be set for life.
Yeah.
Forget you.
I don't blame him because he built this himself. Is he the best MMA fighter of all time? I don't think so.
Well,
but he has set himself up into perfect situations and gotten to the heads of his opponents by spouting his mouth off.
You know, obviously, in order to be considered the GOAT, you need to have a resume that says so. And Conor, to me, I mean, geez, he's only 28 years old.
True.
I mean, if he stuck around and continued to do what he's doing for another 4, 5, 6 years, then absolutely you got to consider him right at the top of that list, of that very short list. And when I think of that list, I think of John Jones.
Mm.
I think of George St. Pierre. I think of Anderson Silva. I think of maybe Fedor Emelianenko.
Mm-hmm.
Randy Couture, BJ Penn. It's a short list, but Conor McGregor, where he's going right now, if he continued to fight, and most people don't think he will because he's already made millions upon millions, but if he wanted to stake his claim as the best ever and continue to put his body through all the grinding that he does week in and week out for training camps, then he could. But, you know, we'll be lucky to see that if he does, because it doesn't seem like that will be the case.
Best thing for Conor to do would be to take the fight, set himself up, and then give a thank you to the UFC by having just a couple more fights. Maybe conclude the trilogy with Nate Diaz. Maybe defend a title or two. Maybe get some other fighters established and then walk out. I would say three fights would be absolutely tremendous, because they would put so many other fighters who are just on the card on that pedestal in front of people, and you would have to load those cards, because it would be a good way for casual fans to see some of the new faces, and that would be perfect. I would love to see Conor do that, a passing of the torch kind of deal.
Yeah. Regardless, so whatever Conor does is must-see TV. We're going to be tuning in whenever he fights next, whoever it may be, Floyd Mayweather, Nate Diaz, whatever. We got to talk a little bit about UFC 213. Did you see that card announced?
I did. I did. Before we get into that, I have to ask one thing from you, because you mentioned a name that I wanted to touch on, George St-Pierre. Did you hear his last comment? We could touch on it real quick.
Yeah, he basically said that when he comes back, if he does not win, he's one and done. He'll retire.
Are you worried that you might only see one more St-Pierre fight?
No, see, this is the thing. George St-Pierre has always been one of those guys that he's open and honest. He's not like a lot of these other fighters that want to keep things close and don't want the public to know exactly how he feels and whatnot. Right. And I think George St-Pierre, he's always been honest about it. He gets scared when he's walking down to the cage to fight.
Who wouldn't?
He said that. I mean, right, but a lot of guys, you know, they put on that tough guy persona. I'm not scared. I'm going to go in there and whoop my opponent's butt.
Right.
George will be open and honest and tell you that. And I think that he knows that the stage he is right now in his life with his age, with how much mileage is on his body for how long he's competed at such a high level. I mean, he's not going up against cupcakes when he was defending his belt. He was going against the best of the best of the best time in and time out. So if you think about that's extra wear and tear on your body because you've been going against the most elite of the elite out there. So it doesn't surprise me to hear him say that. I do feel a little bit of hesitation in George. We talked about this last time. I think right now, because of the time off, his mental side of the fight game is not quite as strong as maybe it used to be. And that's just from time outside of the cage. I think the biggest thing for George is actually getting in there with some other elite mixed martial artists and kind of full-blown sparring just to see where he's at. And I'm not sure if he's done that or not. I'm sure he probably has to a certain degree. But I think until he does something like that and he knows internally that he's ready to come back, that's when we're going to see him. And I wholeheartedly believe we will one day, regardless if it's, it doesn't seem like it's going to be Bisping now. The middleweight thing is out. Yeah. So it looks like it's going to be Tyron Woodley. I mean, heck, even if it ends up being a Diaz brother, sign me up. I just want to see George come back.
I would love the Diaz brothers. That would be perfect. It would be absolutely perfect. You get that big, high-profile fight. And then if he wins, he deserves the title shot by all means. And it would
it's
just
a money
be,
fight.
It would be a huge money fight. And it would also be that little fine-tuning thing. And if GSP doesn't win, well, he's done. He's done. I'm holding out judgment that he actually is going to fight. We'll see. If it comes and he steps up and he weighs in, then I'll look forward to it. But yeah, 213, you mentioned the card, and it is pretty good.
Yeah, the main event is actually going to be for the women's 135-pound strap. Amanda Nunes is going to be defending her belt against Valentina Shevchenko. That's going to be a monster fight in the women's division. The co-main event is Yoel Romero and Robert Whittaker. We've talked about that before. That's another monster fight. You got Fabricio Werdum and Alistair Overeem tangling again. I believe this is the third time they fought one another. Robbie Lawler and Donald Cerrone in a much-anticipated welterweight matchup. And then you got Anthony Pettis versus Jim Miller. That's a nice matchup there. Travis Brown's coming back and taking on Aleksei Oleinik. A lot of interesting matchups here. Bilal Muhammad against Jordan Mean. Rob Font out of Boston. Sitio Tong is taking on Douglas Andrade. So really good card top to bottom. That's going to be one that you don't want to miss.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun one. I'm looking forward to it. And it's
so far away.
It's
so close, Brian.
I mean, you've got UFC 212, and then you've got this one. And it's only roughly a little over a month away, so it's not that far considering. But, yeah, I do want this one to come up. And, by the way, it's been a year since Stipe's been champion, right?
It's been something like that, yeah. He's been the champ for a while.
I think it's been a year and a month or so, because I remember this pay-per-view is going to be in Rio, I believe, or in Brazil for 212. So, yeah.
Yeah, Sao Paulo. 212 is right. Sao Paulo, yeah. Yeah, I still remember him running around screaming, "I'm the champ of the world!" in his raspy voice.
Right, and Werdum getting knocked out after that stupid smile. So, I'm looking forward to that one too, but even more so looking forward to the big international fight week with the UFC. It's always a great thing, and hopefully these fighters stay healthy. For the love of God, stay healthy, please.
I know, tell me about it.
I don't want to see another super card go by the wayside. I can't do it in my heart.
Having said that, you know, another guy that I pray to God stays healthy because he's a friend of the show, and he's coming up next, Tim Boach. This is Ryan Jarrell from The Main Event. We are proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog is located in Bangor at 26 Front Street, right next to Penobscot River. You can call them at 947-8009 or visit them at seadogbrewing.com. Very excited to announce that the Sea Dog has a new summer menu. There are so many great things on this menu that are so just unbelievably mouthwatering. I could go through this whole thing, but I'm just going to give you a couple, just to give you a little taste, just to give you a little tease here. One of the new items, the ahi tuna poke. Raw sashimi tuna with avocado dressed in Hawaiian-style soy sesame citrus sauce, served with crispy wonton chips and garnished with wakame seaweed salad and tobiko fish roe. Wow, I feel like I'm in Hawaii right now getting ready to dip my toes into the ocean and eat some unbelievable food. Also, if you want a little bit more of a Maine type of style, they have the lobster mac and cheese, a broiled top brown skillet of orchetta pasta, cheddar mac and cheese sauce, and fresh picked lobster meat. And if you wanted to, there is a double order available. Good Lord. One of my favorites is the fried calamari. Same preparation, but now served in only one size only, a 6-ounce portion. God, I love calamari. I can't wait to get there this summer and eat some of that. And also, the Sea Dog's beers are always on tap. Unbelievable. The Blue Paw, my favorite. Brian's favorite. So many great things to do in one fantastic place. On 26 Front Street, the Sea Dog Brewing Company. That is Conan the Barbarian's music, and that means only one thing. The Barbarian Tim Boach is back on the main event. Tim will climb back into the octagon next on June 25th when he takes on Johnny Big Rig Hendricks at UFC Fight Night 112 in Oklahoma City at the Chesapeake Energy Arena. Thank you as always, Tim.
Hey, my pleasure being here. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's definitely our pleasure. You know, the last time we had you on the show was right before you stopped Hafi on the Tall in the first round at UFC 205 in New York City. How much of a thrill was it to get such a big win on such a huge stage?
Pretty indescribable.
I bet.
You know, being at Madison Square Garden alone, you know, having the opportunity to fight there was, you know, obviously once in a lifetime for me. And, you know, very few people get that opportunity. And then to go in there and win by knocking out your opponent, you know, words can't describe that feeling.
Now, what was the game plan heading into that fight? And was there ever a time where you didn't feel in complete control against Natal? Because you looked like you were in control the whole fight.
Yeah, no, I felt in control. The game plan was just to go in there and impose my will. Know that he's the type of fighter that if you let him get rolling, he's very effective and can be very durable once he gets into his rhythm. But I knew if I could put my hands on him early and put a little bit of fear into him, I'd certainly have the upper hand. And I was able to land a big shot very early in that fight, and the rest was downhill for him from there.
Yeah, and it was a very, very impressive win. I was thrilled for you to see you get that W there. I'm curious, did you get a chance to watch any of the other fights after yours as well? It was all over with? And in particular, I'm just curious on your thoughts on that big Conor McGregor win and you know, claiming a second belt.
Yeah, he's pretty legit. You know, you can't argue the fact that he's, you know, gets in there, he runs his mouth a lot, but he also backs it up, so. I give the guy a lot of credit for being able to do that, and he's obviously made himself a lot of money doing things the way that he does. So, you know, I give him much respect for that, but you know, he's definitely a different style fighter than I am and goes about things differently than I do as an individual. But as a fighter, he's a heck of a guy.
Now, aside from the impressive victory here, when your career is all said and done, when you look back at UFC 205, what will be like the most vivid memory that you'll come away with when you're looking at this, you know, 10, 15 years down the road from now?
I think it was the fact that that was the first fight that my oldest son had ever gone to. It will definitely be the biggest part of that he was able to go to first UFC fight, see me compete, see me win by knockout, and to do it at Madison Square Garden, that's going to be a combination that's pretty tough to beat.
Yeah, that's got to be amazing. What does it feel like to be able to step into the cage knowing that your son is right there watching you? Does that put any extra pressure on you to perform for your boy?
I don't know if I'd call it pressure, but it certainly is motivation.
Right, there you go. Okay.
You don't want your kid to see you get beaten to a bloody mess. So obviously you want to go in there and do things to the best of your ability. But, you know, pressure to me, you know, I've been dealing with it my whole life. I've been competing forever, so I don't really look at competition as pressure. I look at it as more of a challenge and really look forward to it.
Now, 3 months after dispatching of Natal, you stepped into the octagon against Jacare Souza at UFC 208. Although you lost that fight, it seemed that you had Jacare rocked, actually, at one point in the fight. Did you pick up on the fact that he looked stunned? And looking back on it now, would you have tried a little bit more, I don't want to say aggressively, to take him out at that point? Or did you feel like it was best to always proceed with caution against such a dangerous opponent like Jacare?
Yeah, you know, with Jacare, I knew I had him hurt, and that was the plan, was to get in there, same thing, hurt him early, just continue to put my hands on him and try to avoid the takedown. But, you know, he also knew the state that he was in and how things were going to go, and had that really nice blast double, and then set me up really nice. You know, we'd actually trained just to kind of hold on bottom and not even try to get up because, you know, everybody knows the submission machine that he is. And, you know, looking back on it, he gave me the window and I took the bait. Boy, you know, to have that to do over again. But, yeah, maybe I would have jumped on it a little bit more, but it's hard to say. You know, he could have, should have, could have, would have after
right.
the fight. But, you know, it was a great opportunity to get in there. I felt like it was an opportunity to, you know, really jump up the ladder. Unfortunately, it didn't go the way we wanted. You know, here we are fighting Big Rig next, former world champ. I'm excited about this one coming up.
Yeah, we're definitely going to dive into this one here in a second. I just one last question about the Jacare fight. I'm just curious what Coach Marcus Davis told you afterwards. And was there a specific lesson that maybe that you learned from that fight that you can take moving forward?
Marcus, overall, I mean, he was happy with everything. You know, obviously we're not happy about a loss ever, but, you know, I was in there letting my hands go. That was the plan, just get in there and let it go. Maybe I shouldn't have been kicking so much, but the kicks were landing and doing damage to the leg. Maybe I threw one too many kicks. You know, again, hindsight's 20/20. Could have done this, could have done that, but the fight went the way that it did. Lesson learned, but it, you know, it was definitely a confidence builder. I still consider Jacare one of the, you know, if not the most dangerous guy in the weight class, although he got dinged up pretty bad his last fight. You know, he's definitely a solid fighter, and I have a lot of respect for him. The fact that he got in there and mixed it up, you know, gives me a lot of confidence coming into this next fight.
Yeah, Brian and myself have been doing the play-by-play for the NEF broadcasts down in Lewiston, and we were all at the Buffalo Wild Wings afterwards. We all got there just in time to see that fight, and we all were cheering for you big time. And when you landed that shot, you could hear everyone, you know, in the whole general area there starting to really feel like that was the window. So, but you know,
yeah,
it's good to I'm sure it's good to hear that you got all these people back here in Maine that are supporting you. Regardless, win or lose, we were all there ready to support you and cheer you on.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate that very much. And I know there's a lot of fans back in Maine, and it's always a pleasure getting back there and seeing everybody when I'm back in the great state of Maine.
Now, now you've been able to take a little time off, Tim, since you've last fought, and you're going to be fighting Johnny here on the 25th of June. What have you been up to? Have you been doing any hunting or fishing? What have you been doing to relax and kind of take your mind off things?
Well, I actually haven't taken much time off. I wasn't hurt from my last fight, so I got right back into training pretty much. So I've been, you know, improving and getting stronger and faster, and just trying to make sure that this next fight happens exactly how we want it to and then come out with a victory. So I've been training. I've been staying focused on what needs to happen to make sure that I get the win in this fight against Johnny. And, you know, I had the luxury of knowing about this fight for a while. I knew about it a while before it was even announced. So I've been getting ready for this one for quite a while.
How has this camp been going for you? And what have you and Marcus been working on in particular in preparation for Mr. Hendricks?
camp's been going great. You know, haven't had any hiccups at all. Training's been going well, been able to recover, stay healthy the whole time. And just anticipating, you know, obviously a very strong Johnny Hendricks, where he doesn't have to worry about any type of weight cut, I would assume. You know, he's moving up a weight class, obviously, so he'll be able to eat as much as he wants and be very strong. I imagine he's lifting, and wrestlers naturally have that functional strength that's very hard to describe. So I'm anticipating dealing with a very strong wrestler in there. But fortunately, that's something I've been dealing with my entire life, so I don't think it's going to make me uncomfortable at all. And I think Johnny might be overestimating his abilities as a, you know, he's obviously a strong guy. He's a world champion at 170, but moving up in a weight class is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, I was actually curious about your thoughts about the size difference here. Obviously, there's a reason for weight classes. You fought at middleweight and even at light heavyweight in your career, and Johnny's always been at welterweight. So is the size difference here going to be the deciding factor? Are you just the bigger, stronger guy here?
Absolutely. I mean, I started my career at heavyweight. I wrestled at heavyweight in college, and he was a 155-pounder in college. So you're talking about definitely two different sized individuals in that cage. But, you know, back to the beginning days of UFC, there were no weight classes. So, you know, if you're a tough fighter and you're able to take people out, it doesn't really matter how big you are. You got to be able to know what you're doing in there. So he obviously does. He was world champion. But, you know, I think if he's relying on his strength being the deciding factor in this, he's going to be in a lot of trouble.
You know, and obviously it's no secret that both Johnny and yourself can put the lights out on any opponent really in a blink of an eye. And having said that, do you believe that you still hold the striking advantage here in this fight?
Oh, without a doubt. I think I'm a better striker than him all around. I think I'm a better submission guy than him. I think wrestling-wise, he definitely achieved higher level of wrestling, but oftentimes you see that go away when wrestlers are in the sport of mixed martial arts for a long time. They kind of lose that wrestling edge that you have, say, right out of college, just because it's very rare that you can find wrestlers or a wrestling room to compete in if it's on the same level as a Division I college room. But, yeah, I feel like I'm head and shoulders above him striking-wise. He's a southpaw, which some people might think, you know, presents some kind of difficulty dealing with. But a few years back I fought, Lombard, fought Nick Ring and Okami all in the same year, you know, three fights back to back against southpaws, and won all three of those. So I'm pretty good at dealing with southpaws. It's nothing that surprises me, and it's something that I've obviously trained a lot for. So I'll be able to deal with them once we get in that octagon for sure.
Obviously, it sounds like you're clearly comfortable wherever the fight goes. Do you anticipate Johnny maybe trying to make this a certain kind of fight? Do you think that stylistically he thinks that he might have an advantage over you in some way, shape, or form here? I'm just curious what you're expecting from him.
I kind of expect the same thing that he always does, is he'll, you know, throw his power punches. He'll attempt to close the distance and kind of make it a dirty grappling match where he can try to drain my energy down, get me tired, maybe drag me to the mat if he can, put me against a cage, dirty box, and work the clinch. You know, I expect very much the same stuff you always see out of him. It's very hard for a fighter, you know, who's had a lot of success and been around the game a long time to somehow immediately, you know, do something different. You know, it's very rare that you see that. So I'm not expecting any surprises. I think he's going to go with what he knows best and what has been working for him. I think for him to try to change that up at this point doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm not sure even what he could do at this point to change things up and surprise anybody. So, but maybe I'll be wrong, and I'll have to figure it out on fight night. That I'm willing to do that. I can definitely problem solve. That's part of being a fighter, is being able to make adjustments on the fly as you see things occurring right in front of you.
Now, do you see this fight going the distance, or do you anticipate finishing this at some point before the final bell sounds?
Honestly, I'd like to get this over with in the first round, so I'm planning on knocking him out in the first round.
I like it.
I like it, too. Now, if that does come to fruition, how soon do you want to get back in the cage again?
Well, we'll see. We'll see how banged up I am. That's kind of the deciding factor. never know. Even sometimes when I've won fights, it sure hasn't felt like it. So it really depends. If I'm ready to go, everything's healthy, just as long as I don't have to miss any of my hunting season this fall. That'll kind of dictate when I get back in there, if the timing's right. And so definitely want to get up to Maine for opener on rifle, and I've got some plans to get out to Colorado and kill an elk this year. So I don't want to interrupt any of those plans this year. I've missed too many hunting trips in the past couple of years.
Now, have you ever killed a moose before?
I have not. I definitely have that on my list of things to do.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, I had my first encounter face-to-face with about a 750-pound moose not too long ago. I've been doing a little bit of surveying, boundary line work with a friend of mine, and we were on a snowmobile. This was a couple months ago now, coming around this corner, and there was a moose that was sleeping on the side of this trail, and we spooked him, and he got up and got right in the middle of the trail and was just staring at us. And, you know, I didn't have a gun or anything. We were going out to do work. I can't tell you the amount of fear that I felt. It would probably be the same about me standing in the octagon looking across and seeing you scowling at me.
Yeah, they're definitely a large, imposing creature. Sure, but they're pretty harmless for the most part.
Right.
You catch them during the rut, and they decide they want to stomp you out.
Yeah, I'll be doing my best, Olympic sprinting impersonation and just getting the heck out of the way. Tim, it's always a pleasure to have you on. We look forward to the next time, and best of luck against Johnny Hendricks on the 25th of June.
All right, well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you having me on.
Well, it's summer coming right around the corner. It might be slow to start off here in this general area of the state of Maine, but it is coming in full force, and you know what that means? Cold beer, great food, and awesome music at the Bangor waterfront, too. And our friends at the Sea Dog Brewing Company are going to be helping you go to the concerts for absolutely free if you go down before on concert dates and you get a little lady luck on your side. Here's all you have to do. You go down there on a concert night, like, I don't know, say, Rod Stewart. Maybe he's down there on the waterfront. I don't know, maybe you're more of a hard rock fan. You're going to be down there. Maybe you want to go see Korn one night. Well, you can go down to the Sea Dog on the event nights, and what you do, you go there, and an hour before the show, they will draw a winner to go and with their friend to see the concert for absolutely free, thanks to the Sea Dog, located at 26 Front Street in Bangor. Yeah, absolutely free. I went to a concert a little while ago. It was fun. It was absolute blast. A little cold for my liking, but it's going to be a lot warmer once this season really picks up in full force. And again, the back deck is open. You can enjoy the waterfront views. It's just going to be so much fun. And again, great menu items coming on there for the Sea Dog as well, including a chilled seafood sampler. Oh, it's making my mouth water. Wash it down with a delightful Blue Paw beer or anything else that strikes your fancy. And go check it out for yourself. And maybe, just maybe, if you're lucky, like Ryan and I are, you'll win some tickets courtesy to Sea Dog Brewing Company and the Brew Pub as well, located 26 Front Street. You can give them a call at 947-8009 or check them out on Facebook as well at Sea Dog Bangor or seadogbrewing.com.
Joining us now is an undefeated mixed martial artist who fights next at Bellator NYC, Sonnen vs. Silva, when he takes on champ Michael Chandler for the lightweight strap. Brent Primus joins the main event. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's definitely a pleasure to have you on. I cannot wait to discuss your upcoming fight against Chandler. I'm salivating at the chance to watch that fight. It's going to be a great one. Now, this will be your sixth fight for the Bellator promotion. You finished your first three contests in the first round, and your last two have been split decision wins. How are you feeling heading into this fight, which is clearly the biggest of your career?
Yeah, man, I feel great. You know, this is a lifetime opportunity, and I've been training my butt off for the last 10, 12 years just for this opportunity here, and man, I'm excited. You know, I'm fighting in New York City in the Madison Square Garden and fighting one of the top lightweights in the world and for the belt. So, man, life's going great.
Yeah, what is it like to be at MSG, that hallowed ground that so many big-time fights are going to be at, and MMA just legalized within the last year or so? What is it going to be like to just be able to compete in that venue?
Man, I guess I didn't really know that until I'm actually there competing, but you know, last month they flew me out there for press conferences and everything, just walking in Madison Square Garden. Man, it just kind of takes your breath away, you know, seeing all the pictures of all the fighters that fought in there, and it's, man, it's going to be pretty cool, man. I can't wait. And we're weighing in the same scale that Muhammad Ali weighed in and all those guys. This is literally like the mecca of arenas to fight in. And, you know, I just feel truly blessed to be a part of this whole situation.
Yeah, you're at the big show, man, and you definitely deserve it. As I mentioned before, undefeated, you know, your last two fights, again, as I mentioned, against Anderson and Santos, they were close contests. Looking back at those two fights in particular now, do you think there was something that you could have done any differently to pick up a finish there in either of those?
Yeah, I mean, I think there always is. Whenever you're done, you know, with a fight, you always, man, I wish I would have done that. I wish I would have done this, you know. For sure, you know, definitely. With Derek Anderson, you know, I went in there with a popped rib, and my cartilage was torn in my rib, and every time I threw my left hand, my rib kept on popping out, and it was kind of a weird, weird feeling, and, you know, adrenaline takes, you know, a big part of that stuff. You know, I didn't really feel the pain as much, but every single time I threw my left hand, my rib kept on popping out, and it just took my breath away a lot, and, you know, so that kind of sucked. I really think I could have finished him and had his back a couple times. I couldn't flatten him out because of my rib, and Santos, you know, that was a good experience too. You know, I was just trying to rush the fight too much, and I should have just settled down, relaxed, and played my own game. And, you know, but, every fight is a learning lesson, you know, and, I learned a lot in those fights, you know, taking those in, into key into this next fight.
Now, we've had Derek Anderson on the show before, and he told us that he emphatically feels that he won that fight against you, and he told us something to the degree of that you know that he won the fight. Now, when you have a split decision win, when it's close like that, do you really want to get back in there and fight a guy that you had a close fight with to put, like, an exclamation point on that?
Yeah, you know, I think so, too, but, man, at the same time, man, Derek Anderson is, like, man, as far as I'm concerned, he's a cheater, you know. Like, when we were fighting, he was the most slipperiest, slimiest guy I've ever fought in my life. And I've competed in jiu-jitsu tournaments, no-gi, my whole life, and he seriously, he had Vaseline or something all over his body. And I know it sounds like a cheap thing to say, but as soon as we got done fighting, you know, I went outside and I saw my mom was talking to his mom. And they had a couple drinks or whatever, and I went up to his mom, and I was like, what's up with your son? Did he oil up or put Vaseline on himself before we fought? And she's like, no, I don't know. I make sure that I wash his whole body. I give him a bath and scrub him down with Dawn soap to make sure that he'd get it all off of him. And I was like, what the hell? And so right there, it kind of gives me a red flag, like, dude, this guy oiled up or something like that, and I don't know why his mom would tell me that. She tried to get it all off of him and scrub it off of him with Dawn soap the night before we fought. So as far as I'm concerned, man, that guy's a cheater. You know, he oiled up or put Vaseline on, you know, 24 hours before we fought, and when he sweated, it came out. But he was a freaking slimy fish in there, man. It was pretty crazy.
That is absolutely bizarre that first you would even mention that she was, like, scrubbing her son. I know it's a family thing, but that is weird. But maybe that's his superpower,
yeah.
like Spidey sense. He can, like, shoot webs out. Maybe he's just extremely slippery.
Maybe, you know, I think maybe he's just a slimy, slimy guy. But then I went and talked to his mom, like, she was drunk, and she's like, she's a nice lady. But she's like, no, I made sure to get it off, and I gave him a bath and scrubbed it off with Dawn soap. And right then I was like, okay, something's up, you know. But, yeah, man, it was weird for sure. Definitely weird.
Well, I think if Derek Anderson, when he hears this, there's definitely going to be Primus Anderson 2 at some point. Maybe for the lightweight strap after you take on Chandler and get that win there. Now, Brent.
Yeah, if he can make weight. You know, he's been missing weight at 155, and so he went up to 170. I know that. But, yeah, the guy needs the make weight at 155 and get his damn slime off of him or something. But yeah, for sure.
Well, I know the fans would totally be on board to see that fight again. Now, it's been over a year since you last competed. What have you been working on since we've seen you in the cage last? And are we going to see the best version of Brent Primus that we have ever seen on June 24th?
Yeah, man, I've been working on pretty much everything. You know, I think my ground game's gotten a lot better. My wrestling's definitely gotten better. My striking's gotten better. I'm up here in Irvine, California, training with Team Oyama, and Coach Oyama is the man, dude. He's like a man. His attention to detail and everything. He's such an awesome coach, man. He's been really working with me in my stand up, and so I'm blessed to be working with him. He's an awesome coach. You know, in Oregon, I train with Performance Martial Arts in Springfield, Oregon, and Greasy Baja Portland, and man, I'm just training with black belts like left and right, and you know, I'm feeling good, I'm feeling sharp, and you know, I can't wait to get in there and prove why I'm here.
Now, I know every day during camp is a little bit different. You're working on different areas of your overall game. But what does a week typically look like for you? How many times are you in the gym putting in work?
Oh, man, I'm training my butt off. You know, everybody tells me I overtrain. But that's just one of the things, you know, it's a hard sport to compete in and not overtrain or just train, you know, hard. Like, man, I get up in the morning at, you know, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning and usually around 7 and I do 1,200 crunches and 250 pull-ups, and then I go straight to the gym. I train from usually 11 to 2, come home. I'll either go to conditioning or work out, and then I'll go back to the gym from 6 to 9, come home and do 500 push-ups, 1,000 crunches, 150 ab wheels, and jump, 150 jump squats. And, man, I just it's just nonstop. You know, I really don't get a bunch of rest in fight camps, and I'm just training my butt off, you know, and I'm up there at Team Oyama, and they're definitely trying to control me how I train, you know. It's hard. I'm always, they're like, oh, let's take a rest, and I'll sneak off to the school and do some sprints or something. But, yeah, man, it's a crazy life, and I would rather be doing this than working 9 to 5 on a desk, I'll tell you that much. So,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. I've done that before too, and that's no fun. I'm not quite sure I'd want to be in your shoes right there, because it takes a special kind of human being to go through everything that you put your body through to compete at the level that you're at. And obviously, you've been doing it for quite some time here with this upcoming title challenge against Michael Chandler. Now, Brent, I'm curious what your weight is like right now, and is the cut to make 155 difficult for you? And also, is there any chance that we're going to see you maybe go up to 170 at some point later on in your career?
You know, I think I'm good at 155 right now. This is my weight class, but you never know, especially with all the new laws or new rules that are coming out. But, you know, I typically walk around at 190, but in fight camp, like right now, I'm like 175, and I feel good, and I'm going to start I'm already starting my diet like months ago or whatever, but I'm going to go really, really strict, you know, this next week and get down to about 170 and then make my final cuts from there. But, man, it's not fun. I love to eat. Eating is like one of my favorite things to do. And especially, man, I'm missing out on carbs and cake and ice cream and cookies. And I can't wait to indulge myself, you know, in New York and, you know, get some good food in me for sure. You know, I diet like crazy, man. And I'm training my butt off. And the only carb I really get is a half a sweet potato a day. And that's like heaven to me. You know, I sometimes wake up in the morning and it's like, man, I can't wait to get my sweet potato. But it's definitely tough, you know, training, cutting that and dieting all the time. That's for sure.
Now, is there a specific kind of carb that you can't wait to load back up on after the fight? Are you a pizza guy? Do you dive into burgers? What is it that you really miss when you're cutting weight?
Oh man, I just miss pizza, bread, pasta. I love Italian food. Man, I really, really like cake and cookies like crazy, man. It's like sometimes, like, I know it sounds weird, but like I will wake up in the middle of the night in a dead sweat, like having a nightmare that I ate like a cheeseburger or a piece of cake, and I'll like wake up sweating like, oh my God, I'm not going to make weight. I ate a piece of cake, and I'll like think to myself like, man, when did I eat a piece of cake? There's no way. And I'm like, oh man, that was just a nightmare. It's crazy. But I definitely have dreams about eating food, you know, and it's pretty crazy. They're so realistic. I can smell them almost. It's weird.
So I guess it's safe to say you didn't celebrate National Donut Day, huh?
Oh, heck no. I wish I did, though.
I ate a couple for you, then. I had three. I feel bad.
What did you have? What did you have, Brian?
What did I have? Yeah. Oh, I had three donuts. Yeah. Dunkin' Donuts came into my work, and they dropped off a whole bunch. So I'm sorry. I don't mean to tell you that, because I know you're struggling through the hunger strike that is training. But, yeah, I indulged.
I had a Bismarck myself. I don't typically do donuts. I'm more of a pizza guy, Brent, you know, so donuts aren't really my thing. But, you know, National Donut Day, I'm not training for a big fight like you, so I can cheat. Now, obviously, we've talked about your huge fight that's coming up. What are your thoughts on the Sonnen Silva main event? Who do you see winning that fight? And obviously, with your fight being right before it, depending on how it goes, there might not be a chance that you'll be able to actually sit back and watch it. But what are your thoughts on that fight? How does it play out?
And yeah, I'm excited to watch that fight and the Fedor fight. But you know, I train Chael Sonnen in Portland, you know, every week when I'm there. And he's a good guy. He's got awesome wrestling. And not only is he a good guy, he's a really smart guy. So I think that he's going to go out there and play a really good, smart game. I don't think he's going to stand up and try to bang with Vandalay, which I don't think is a good decision for too many people. So I really think that, you know, Chael's going to be a smart fighter out there, and he's going to take him down and wear him out on the ground, and that's how I see it happening.
Now, you mentioned Chael is a really nice guy, and we know of him with his persona and calling people out in those press conference tirades and everything. But what is he like, too, just in the training sphere?
Man, he's seriously the nicest guy ever, man. Like, it's crazy when the cameras are on him. He's, like, he's, you know, a smartass and just, like, I don't know. He's awesome. He's so brilliant how fast he comes up with everything. You know, he's really smart. Some people say he's cocky and all this stuff, but, man, in person, he's literally the nicest guy you will ever meet, and just humble as can be, and it's an honor, and it's pretty cool to get to train with that guy.
I've always been a huge, huge Chael fan. I'm curious what you think of my Chael impersonation, because I kind of pride myself on a lot of my impersonations. Will you give me an honest answer?
About you?
Yeah. Tell me what you think. I'd just like to know what you think, because I've been working on it a little bit. But, you know, back in the day when he's, you know, crap-talking Anderson Silva, he's like, Anderson Silva, you absolutely suck. Is that pretty on par, or is that a little too nasally?
Yeah, no, that's actually pretty good. You know, that's pretty good.
Okay.
I guess he does kind of have a little whiny voice when he starts talking crap, but. Yeah, man, that's pretty good for sure.
Okay, well, you have to check out the show, because I do the Diaz brothers, Anderson Silva. I got a whole bunch of them, but Chael is one of my all-time favorites, so please tell him that he's got a huge fan up here in Maine, and can't wait to see both him and yourself pick up victories here. Now, let's dive into and break down this huge title fight versus Michael Chandler. Where do you believe you hold the advantages here in this fight?
I definitely think I have the advantage on the ground. You know, my submission game is, in my jiu-jitsu, I feel is top-notch compared to him. I mean, I know he's never been submitted. He's an awesome wrestler. He's got me on that, you know. But honestly, I'm not really too worried about getting taken down. He can take me down all he wants, really. I think eventually I'll catch him. And I also feel like I have the advantage of, you know, people just don't know my game. I haven't been in the cage that long. I don't have, like, all that cage time. And, you know, with that cage time, you get concussions and you get head trauma or whatever, and I feel like he's gotten that, you know, with all the wars he's been in. And, you know, like I say, nobody's seen my full potential. They don't know what I'm capable of doing just because I haven't been in the cage that long. And, you know, so I'm taking that into the cage with me.
Now, obviously, you know, win or lose, this is going to really kind of put you on the map for a lot of those casual fans that maybe don't know who you are quite yet. I mean, having said that, you are very early into your career. You're 7-0. What do you think this fight does for your career? Does it basically just take you to that next level where you're more of a household name, especially if you get the win here or put on a fight that's extremely competitive?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's humongous for me. Not that many people know who I am, like you said, but that's changing day by day, man. I've been doing interviews after podcast, and just been so busy with all the things coming that come with fighting for the belt, you know. And you know, not only that, I'm fighting on one of the biggest stages in the world, Madison Square Garden. I'm fighting in the biggest event that Bellator has thrown. So, man, it's humongous for me, you know. It's big for me, my family, and you know, I just got to go out there and fight like I know I can fight, and I know it's going to be an awesome fight. You know, I should walk out there with that damn belt for sure.
So give us a little prediction. How does this fight end? How do you get your hand raised, Brent?
You know, I'm not going to say too much, but literally, man, like, I like I've said before lots of times, like, I'm kind of a mental case, a head case, you know, like, I go to bed and I've fought in Chandler 1,000 times already in my head. I literally know that I can beat him on the ground. I really think I can beat him standing up. And if it doesn't end like that, man, I really see it going like a 5-round bloody battle. And, you know, Chandler's kind of known for that. He goes a distance and with wars, you know, and, I'm ready for any of these, and I can't wait to get out there and throw leather with one of the best lightweights in the world, man. It's going to be awesome. Can't wait.
Now, is there anybody that you'd like to thank that helped you prepare for this big title fight? Any sponsors or family members or training partners you'd like to give a shout-out to?
Yeah, first, I think my team, man. It takes a team to get me ready, and I train with Performance Martial Arts in Springfield, Oregon, and Gracie Baja, Portland, with Fabiana Scherner, and I'm up here in Irvine, California, training with Team Oyama and Mr. Colin Oyama, man. He's an awesome coach, and he's got a great game plan for me, and he's been helping me out on every level. And, you know, so I got to, you know, truly thank those guys. And I got to thank my sponsors, Bad Boy. Bad Boy's been helping me out with everything, giving me the best gear I could possibly have. And Roots Organic out of Eugene, Oregon, you know, they got the best stuff to grow your home gardens or whatever you want to grow. And, my buddy opened up an acai bowl place in Eugene, Big Kahuna's, man. Big Kahuna bowls are awesome acai bowls. And my buddy Don's Plumbing, the best plumbing company in Lane County. And yeah, and then my other buddy hooked me up with the Fisherman's Market, man. They have, like, fresh fish every day sent to their spot, and the best fish, and helps me keep my weight down. And it's awesome to go there and just eat the cleanest fish. And, you know, so I got to thank all my sponsors, man. They helped me out so much, and I'm truly blessed for all of them. And yeah, man, check me out at Brent155, my Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And man, watch me go out there and shock the world and win this belt on June 24th.
He is Brent Primus, and he will fight Michael Chandler next for the Bellator lightweight title at Bellator NYC, Sonnen versus Silva at Madison Square Garden on Saturday, June 24th, and only on pay-per-view. Thank you so much for joining us today, Brent. There's a good chance that both Brian and myself might be there cage side covering the fights as part of the press team that's down there. So if we are down there, I'll try to sneak out and shake your hand and say hello.
Great, man. I really appreciate it. That'd be awesome. I hope I'll see you guys down there.
For sure. We'll have you back on soon, bud. Have a good day.
Thank you, guys, too.
This is Ryan Jarrell from The Main Event. We are proud to be sponsored by the Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog is located in Bangor at 26 Front Street, right next to Penobscot River. You can call them at 947-8009 or visit them at seadogbrewing.com. Very excited to announce that the Sea Dog has a new summer menu. There are so many great things on this menu that are so just unbelievably mouthwatering. I could go through this whole thing, but I'm just going to give you a couple, just to give you a little taste, just to give you a little tease here. One of the new items, the ahi tuna poke. Raw sashimi tuna with avocado dressed in Hawaiian-style soy sesame citrus sauce, served with crispy wonton chips and garnished with wakame seaweed salad and tobiko fish roe. Wow, I feel like I'm in Hawaii right now getting ready to dip my toes into the ocean and eat some unbelievable food. Also, if you want a little bit more of a Maine type of style, they have the lobster mac and cheese, a broiled top brown skillet of orchetta pasta, cheddar mac and cheese sauce, and fresh picked lobster meat. And if you wanted to, there is a double order available. Good Lord. One of my favorites is the fried calamari. Same preparation, but now served in only one size only, a 6-ounce portion. God, I love calamari. I can't wait to get there this summer and eat some of that. And also, the Sea Dog's beers are always on tap. Unbelievable. The Blue Paw, my favorite. Brian's favorite. So many great things to do in one fantastic place. On 26 Front Street, the Sea Dog Brewing Company.
Run for your life with me.
I'm absolutely loving this song by the new Foo Fighters.
Me too.
The new Foo Fighters, same Foo Fighters, but it's called Run. Just was released a couple days ago. I love it. Old hard school.
Yeah, I'm digging this. I love it too.
It reminds me of like, I'm trying to think, All My Life kind of Foo Fighters.
Yeah, yep.
You hear that screeching Dave Grohl and everything. And they're just the badass rock group. I think, for my money, they are the best active rock group too, which is still putting out like top of the notch music.
I mean, I've always liked the Foo Fighters. That song might be my new favorite Foo Fighters song. Although it's so fresh right now,
it'll
take a little time to see how it compares to some of their older stuff.
I love Rise Against too. I think they put out a lot of good stuff, and I was watching and listening at work to a couple of their songs, and I've been so lucky to see them a couple times. House of Blues, I saw them down in Lowell, Massachusetts a couple times too. So
nice. Yeah,
a great band, but I've yet to see the Foo Fighters. That's on my bucket list one day. I'm gonna see them. And, yeah, just putting out great stuff. And the other thing that they were in the news for recently, they were playing in a festival out in California, and they have a strict 11 o'clock curfew. And Dave was wishing his wife happy birthday. They go into Everlong, and you know that final breakdown before they do the final hook of Everlong? They said, well, if they're in this breakdown, we're just going to cut the feed, and they cut all the power to the electric instruments and whatnot. So you could still hear the drums a little bit, but like the guitars are just being powered by their normal amps, which you would have like at a rock club back when they first started. They don't have the house amps and everything that gets the sound out to everyone else. So you could barely hear them. But what happened was Dave Grohl starts screaming. They're playing their instruments as hard as possible to get their own amps going as loud. They crank them up as much so just people could barely hear Everlong's final verses. And then everyone in the crowd, 40,000 fans, sing the last couple of lines in the song.
Oh, wow.
It's a great video. Go check it out. It's been making its way around, too. So
sweet.
That's kind of cool. And that's another reason why I like the Foo Fighters. Plus, Dave Grohl broke his leg and still performed in like a throne. It was phenomenal. So great rock musician. But before we wrap things up, because we've had a great time with Brent Primus, Tim Bosch, both great interviews, as always. Good dudes, too. You want to talk about the UFC pay-per-view coming up?
Oh, yeah, got to.
Why not? Let's do that. So where do you want to go with this one? Because I know we've got a lot to talk about, and there's a lot of MMA coming up. So how much of these do you want to talk about and predict? Because actually, by the way, did I win the last predictions?
I don't know. Did you?
I mean, I did have Stipe winning, right?
You did have
You and Aaron didn't have Stipe. Yeah. I'm just going to put that out there.
But you did have one of them wrong.
We did, I'm going to go back to that real quick here so we don't keep this all up here. Eddie Alvarez and Poirier, which was a draw, so we don't have to worry about that one. Frankie Edgar and Yair. I said Yair, and you guys picked Frankie. I had Maya. You had Masvidal, though, right? You changed it afterwards, but we have to go by the show tape.
Yeah, I did pick Masvidal, but, you know, that was a pretty damn close fight.
It was. And Joanna won, which was no surprise, and then Stipe. So I think we may have tied then. I think we may have tied. All right, so no worries there, but... Our boy Jason Knight looked good.
Oh, my
man, he
God.
Was a beast that night.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a superstar on the rise. This is a guy that you better pay attention to because he's a killer. He is coming, and it's just going to be a matter of time before he's in that top five.
I know Dillashaw wants Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, but can we get Jason Knight to move up and get some high-profile featherweight matchups? Because that guy is a guy on the move.
Oh, smokes.
So, yeah. Okay, well, I'll concess that maybe we tied. So let's go into this one. And you want to pick?
I just say we do the top three.
Yeah,
On another note, I will say I was lucky enough to be at the World Series of Fighting event at Madison Square Garden on New Year's Eve. And I got to see one Marlon Moraes, and he's going to be making his UFC debut, and he's taking on Rafael and Sun Tzu. This guy, Marlon, is a machine. Unbelievable fighter. I can't wait for this fight. Obviously, Sun Tzu is a well-established veteran, but I'm really looking forward to see what Marlon brings, and it wouldn't surprise me if a new star is born.
That's going to be an absolute brawl, too, so do not miss that one. It should be a real fun one. So let's do the top three. I think that makes sense. So,
Vitor? We do Vitor, bro. He's taking on Nate Marquardt, bro.
Now, I've been hearing some rumors that this might be Vitor's last fight.
I mean, it could be Marquardt's last, too.
It could be, too. He lost to Sam Alvey, and I love Sam, smiling Sam Alvey, but not necessarily the highlight of losses on his record compared to some of the other ones like Gastelum, Tavares, Ellenberger back in the earlier years. And Vitor, honestly, you can say what you want to. He has a no contest for his last matchup because they overturned it after a marijuana test turned up positive for Gastelum. But he still lost to Mousasi. He still lost to Jacare. He beat Dan Henderson and then lost to Weidman prior to that one. So I'm not sure we're seeing the best Vitor out there either. And if he does lose, this could be the end of the road. So is this like an eliminator? Whoever loses this one's probably either going to a different promotion or is probably done.
You know, honestly, I think especially in Vitor's case, he's been doing this since he was a teenager.
Right.
You know, so win or lose, at some point you hang it up. I mean, he's not going to be in contention for a belt at any point soon.
Right.
So whatever happens, he's just going to be taking more and more punishment to the body. I mean, does he need the money at this point? I don't know. I would assume not if he's been smart with his money.
Right.
But he's pushing 40, and he's been in wars throughout his career. He's been fighting. He, for crying out loud, he fought back in the Pride era. So, you know, I think that Vitor, I think I'm going to say Vitor wins this fight via round one knockout, but it's only because it's in Brazil. I think if it was in America, I don't think he'd win the fight, but it's
same
in Brazil.
Here. Same here. And the Brazilian effect. The only person who lost, I think, that had Brazilian heritage the last UFC pay-per-view there was Verdum. Everyone else was, like, dominating. That's why Stipe was against so many odds. And another reason why I'm going to have to pick Vitor. Hopefully this is the crowning achievement. He can retire afterwards in his home country because he turned 40 in April.
Yeah, okay. So I knew he had to be getting close to 40. But historically, Vitor always does very well in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, over the last few years when all the testosterone abuse allegations and everything have come about. And if you look at Vitor's body a few years ago to now, he just doesn't look like the same guy. I mean, it's a big, big difference. So
yeah, actually, the last time he lost was against Jacare back at UFC 198, which was, basically a year ago. So, congratulations to Stipe. I finally uncovered that one. It was roughly a year and a month ago. So congratulations to him for holding the belt for that long. But, yeah, outside of that, he had a long winning streak, beating Henderson, Bisping, Rockhold, losing to John Jones in Canada, then beating Rumble Johnson. So Vitor is an absolute monster, but, might be time for him to start to think about retiring and having that good, luxurious life in Brazil, which I could only dream of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing, right?
Yeah. All right, co-main event. This one's going to be a pretty fun one, I think.
Yeah, Claudia Gadella versus Carolina Kowalkiewicz. And both of these ladies have lost to the champ, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And to me, this is the matchup for who will be the next person to lose to the champ for a second time. And look, both of these ladies are unbelievably talented. I think this is a very, very close fight. I am actually going to go with Claudia again because it's in Brazil.
Oh, that's a good point.
And Carolina, if it was in her home turf, I think I'd go with her. But I think this is going to be a very, very close split decision win, and I think they'll give it to Claudia because it's in Brazil.
Three combined losses all to Joanna champion.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Right?
They've only lost three times, and it's all to the same person. Jeez, that's ridiculous. Yeah, it's a coin flip for me. I love Kowalkiewicz. I think she actually gave a really good fight to Jędrzejczyk, but unfortunately, Joanna was just a beast, and she is a beast, and she will continue until she decides she doesn't want to continue to punch people's faces in for a living. I don't know who to pick. I want to go with the Brazilian in Brazil, but I also think that Carolina is a very good fighter and that I think she could get it done. That being said, though, give me Claudia.
Yeah.
Again, the Brazilian aspect. Think about the travel. Not only does Kowalkiewicz have to go from Poland to America for a fight, she's now going to go to Brazil. So there's already a language difference because they're speaking English from Portuguese and then trying to understand that from English via Polish, so it's going to be difficult.
You know, an interesting thing here is I actually spoke with Chris Luttrell, who is Claudia's head coach.
Yep.
He's the owner and founder of Luttrell MMA, which is down in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Claudia, that's where her main training camp is, but she also trains three times a week over at Jackson Winklejohn.
Yep.
And so I spoke with head coach Chris Luttrell, and he's game to come on the show afterwards, and we'll break the fight down with him and see how that all played out. But this is going to be a big fight, and you never know. If you look at the last fight Joanna was in, Kowalkiewicz had her hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is a really big fight for both ladies. And I think if Kowalkiewicz had another shot, you never know. I mean, Joanna is human.
The better one, I think, for the UFC, they want Kovalkiewicz to win because she took Joanna to the limit,
yeah.
And it was a very good battle. And if Claudia wins and she gets the next title shot,
yeah.
This would be the third time. And if she loses a third time, it's hard to build up that type of fight when you're already
right.
talking about you've beaten this person handily two times prior to that one.
Right.
So I think the UFC would rather have Kovalkiewicz win, but I'm not quite sure she can get it done. Traveling halfway across the country for this fight in hostile territory. And speaking of hostile territory, you know this is going to be a big-time, one-sided crowd support fan for this matchup. And it's one I've been looking forward to for years. Finally, Blessed is getting the opportunity to fight for the actual title, and it could not have come soon enough.
You know, and if you look at this fight, okay, Max Holloway is on a 10 or 11 fight winning streak, and the last guy that he lost to was the same guy that lost beat Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor. So that just goes to show you, Holloway has been running through the featherweight division since losing to Conor, and Aldo has always been running through the featherweight division minus Conor. And before the Conor fight, Aldo had 18 straight wins. It's ridiculous. That's absolutely ludicrous. And then you see what Jose did when he came back and he fought Frankie for the vacant featherweight belt. And Frankie's one of my favorites of all time. But Jose Aldo, just stylistically, is a matchup nightmare for Frankie Edgar. For whatever reason
right.
why, I don't understand why, because I would think that Frankie would be able to hang with Jose. And
Frankie's kryptonite. It was for the title.
I guess
unfortunately,
so. I
there's
guess
just
so.
Something him and Cowboy just can't get it done when the title's on the line
but,
for some reason.
But having said that, you know, Frankie was the former lightweight
champ.
It's
true.
But it's just
recently.
It just seems to be like lately, there's been a couple of guys, Benson Henderson,
yep.
And now Jose Aldo, that he can't get through. I bet if he fought Benson Henderson again, he'd beat his butt.
Oh, right
I,
now,
I,
yeah,
I
of course.
See
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But Jose Aldo, you know, the big thing for me is going to be is where's Aldo's head at? Just like what Hollywood say, hashtag where's Jose Waldo? You know, I want to know where Aldo's head's at, because what Conor did to him,
yeah.
that's something that I just wonder if psychologically it's affecting him. Now, having said that, I think Jose Aldo is as elite as it gets. I think he's a consummate professional. I think he puts in the hard work. I think he's well-rounded. I think wherever the fight goes, the guy is going to feel comfortable. I think the difference here might be the fact that Max Holloway has a little bit longer of a reach. He hasn't faced anybody
yeah.
quite like Holloway, minus maybe Conor. And I don't know. I mean, to me, if you got a coin, flip it. I think this is going to be a split decision fight. And I hate I want to go with Holloway, but because it's in Brazil, I feel like I'm going to say Jose is going to get the nod if Holloway doesn't finish him. I can't necessarily see Holloway finishing him. But I do think that he could beat him in a you know, five-round war. But because it's in Brazil, I hate to say it, but I think I'm going to go with Aldo, although I'm rooting for Holloway.
Max, they were talking about after he lost to Conor and after he had lost to Bermudez before that if he lost another fight in the UFC, he could be gone. He had three victories under his belt, but he lost his debut at the UFC 143, and then he rattled off three wins and then two straight losses. And they were talking about maybe he would be dropped from the promotion. And as you alluded to, won 10 straight against some of the best in that division. And I think he is finally going to get crowned. I've watched him progress. I've watched him dominate. I've watched him go the distance. And even though it's gone five rounds, it's been unanimous decisions. And he's been absolutely brutal with his opponents, too. I just love everything about Max Holloway. I like the toughness. And I'm not quite sure. There's just something about Aldo. Ever since I saw him get knocked out in that fashion against Conor, it's not that I've lost respect, but I just don't trust him in a fight. Like, even with Frankie, I didn't trust him that he was going to come out on top, even though he handled Frankie with relative ease. But with that all being said, Max just seems like a man possessed. I watched a little bit of the weigh-ins, too, leading up to this, and he just looks like a guy super focused and ready to go. And I think finally he's going to go into hostile territory and do a repeat of 198. And he'll be the Stipe Miocic, the conquering hero, and he's going to bring the title back stateside.
I hope you're right. I'll tell you this. If this fight was in America, I'd go with Max all the way.
Yeah.
I just feel like over there in Brazil, you know, and look, I'm not calling anybody cheaters. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, especially not Aldo, because I think he does it the right way.
He does.
But I just think that there's a little bit of a difference with when you're going over there, you go through the whole process. For whatever reason, it just seems to be a little bit more favored towards the Brazilians. And for whatever reason, I don't know why. and that's why I'm going with Aldo, although I just... God, it pains me to do it because I love Holloway. I want him to get that belt wrapped around him. I just don't think right now it's going to happen. I think he's going to take a step back. I think he's going to win a couple more, and then he will get another shot, hopefully in Vegas somewhere, and he wins it.
Max will finally get blessed with the title. Because the one thing, too, I feel if he loses this one, unless it's an absolute back-and-forth war that impresses so many people, he's going to lose his opportunity. He's going to get out of line.
See, you know what I don't like about this is that I'm going to be rooting for Holloway tonight,
right?
Okay? And I don't want you to win this crown of
But think about it. It's a win-win though. Realistically, it's a win-win for you.
I guess.
Because if you lose, you get the pick right with your heart, you lose. But if Max wins, you still win because your fighter that you were pulling for gets the victory.
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't want to have to be rooting for Aldo to win. I'm rooting for Max all the way.
Yeah, I want Max to win. I think he will win. Though I'm looking here at the featherweight. Man, it's kind of, it's thinned out a tiny bit. It's thinned out. If Yair had won against Frankie, I think he would have been right back up there. He probably would be next in line. But
yeah, but you know, Frankie's one of those guys that, you know, you need to be the best of the best if you're going to get by Frankie Edgar.
Right.
One of these days, we're going to see Frankie, and you know how they always talk about those fighters that they just go over the cliff?
Yeah.
That's going to be Frankie Edgar. One of these days, he's going to go over that cliff, and he's not going to be the same. And I think Frankie's one of those guys that will hang it up. He'll just hang it up. He'll be like, okay, I can't do what I could do anymore because he's constant pressure. He's nonstop. He's in your face. His cardio is through the roof. You just can't get the guy tired. And I think at some point, I mean, he's my age. Like, he's 35. So at some point, he's going to go over that cliff. But right now, he's still right there, man. And you have to be Conor McGregor. You have to be Max Holloway. You have to be Jose Aldo if you're going to get by Frankie Edgar.
Let's put it this way. If Aldo wins, though, I don't see Frankie getting a title shot anytime soon. But Lamas, Cub Swanson's right near there. I don't think Anthony Pettis deserves anything. Cub, man, his last one when he fought Choi, that was an absolute brawl. I was just looking through there because Choi's ranked 13th on UFC.com. So, yeah, it'll be fun. Those three fights, though, are going to be absolutely spectacular, and we'll see. I see a lot of Brazilians on that card, a lot of Brazilians. So we'll see how they do. I'm sure they'll come out more pluses than minuses overall.
You know, and not to crap on the card at all because it's a nice card and everything, but I'm just mostly interested in the main event. That's the fight that's got me all geared up.
It mirrors 198 almost identically, right? Because
the rest of the card just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tailored towards Brazilian fans and whatnot, it seems. And again, I, you know, being an American, go America. You know, I love my country. I want to see more names and guys that I pull for. But, you know, this is just par for the course. I mean, we need to do this. We go over to other countries and we put on great fight cards. And a lot of it's tailored to that demographic. And that's what this is. And it just is what it is. It's still a great main event.
Yeah, the 198 card was Stipe Verdum headlining it. Jacare fought Vitor in the co-main event. And Cyborg versus Leslie Smith. So there was some intrigue there. But, again, the further on down the card you look, it wasn't as appealing. So, yeah, they can't give it all away because, again, they're trying to prep for all these fight nights coming up and all these International Fight Week events that they have coming. And then also they've just seemingly are pounding out big-time pay-per-views all throughout the summer to try to keep people's interest involved while there's no basketball, hockey, and football isn't geared up yet.
Yeah, I'm all for it. Hey, real quick before we get
off
here today, what were your thoughts on the whole Cyborg punching that girl, I can't remember, Manana, or I can't remember her last name.
Well,
obviously, so I was listening to this the other day on the Luke Thomas show, and they were talking about how, you know, this girl was basically trolling her
and she was.
Yeah,
I was watching
time.
Her Twitter, and it was like, man, stop.
So what are your thoughts? I mean, obviously, these are both professional athletes. They have to be around one another from time to time, depending on if they're on the same card or if they have a teammate that they're supporting. Do you think that a professional fighter like Cyborg should get dinged or you know, brought up on charges or whatever for hitting another fellow fighter when this other when this other fellow fighter was really saying some below the belt type of things and really going after her.
You got to compose yourself. You have to realize that you cannot do that. And I understand there's that warrior's code where if you need to settle something, you settle stuff like men or women in this scenario. But still, you have to be able to control yourself to the point where if someone's trying to get under your skin, you just have to be the better man or woman in that situation and just walk away and don't let it get to you, because she let it get to her and now she's in some trouble because of it. And she's already been in trouble due to other stuff outside the cage. So,
and I would agree with you.
I understand the trolling aspect, and I lost respect for the other fighter. And I'm not even remembering her name because I don't really care about her and she doesn't really matter to me at all. But, yeah, Cyborg has to be able to keep her composure a little bit more. And you know what? She probably deserves a little bit of punishment because of that. Because if you don't do it, then you don't get the punishment.
And also, there were different weight classes. Cyborg is significantly bigger. So it was almost like she was picking on, she's a high school student. She's picking on a middle school student or whatever. But I completely agree with you. I mean, this is the real world.
Keep your composure.
You get inside the octagon and you settle your differences with your fists and with your kicks and all that. That's where you do it. You don't do it in the real world. But at the same time, this is just my opinion to all those people out there that want to crap on others and attack them via social media. Take a look in the mirror first. Take a hard look in the mirror, and before you throw stones at others, think about what you've done in your life and if you've ever made any mistakes. Because to me, I think that's a coward's way out. Go behind a computer and trash on other people. I just don't respect it.
I'm big about respect. That's one of the tenets I build a lot of the things around my life around. And I want people to respect me. If they show me respect, I'll respect them back. And if you don't show respect or you mistreat people, then I feel like I don't either want to A, associate with you, or show you the same respect or be around that person. So with that in mind, just do that. And it brings me up to one point before we sign off here. A hockey player named Paul Bissonnette, who's called Biz Nasty on Twitter. He's kind of like a Twitter personality now. Still doing AHL hockey. And some guy online on Twitter, which goes back to your point of the faceless trolls and social media and stuff, went into his DMs and said, "Man, you're the worst." And he started swearing at him and said, "Go home. You should just retire and quit because you're the worst and get rid of your Twitter account." And Paul Bissonnette said, "Hey, man, this is kind of rude. Can you apologize? You made fun of my dog and all this stuff." He's like, if you just apologize, it won't go any further than that. Otherwise, I'm going to report you to the school. And he didn't do anything because this is a college kid. So he sent the DM to the school he went to because he found out some information on him, and he got kicked out of school.
Wow.
And he apologized, tucked his tail between his legs because he realized the relative S-storm that was coming his way. And he finally backtracked. But it was only when he realized the real-life implications of what was going on that he backtracked. So you have to realize that what you say on social media, though you think it might be fun to talk about with your friends, just don't be a-holes.
Yeah.
Just be good to one another, because there are enough people who are going to be a-holes that you encounter. So there's no need to mindlessly do it to people. So that's my little soapbox rant today.
I love it, and I completely agree. Think about others before you act.
Absolutely.
Well, for Brian Stackpole, I am Ryan Jarrell. This has been another edition of The Main Event. We'll see you guys next time.
Peace.